We're starting a series, possibly. We'll start with one class, and we'll see where that takes us. On basic questions in Judaism, and some basic approaches. We will focus partially on the Kuzari, a little bit on Maimonides and others. But there, we have to introduce the study of Jewish philosophy, Jewish thought, Hashkafa, Emunah, however you want to call it. We need to lay down a few points in our approach. And the first one is that I'm not taking any responsibility to answer all your questions. If you walked in here tonight thinking, that's it, now I'm going to have all the answers, so you can walk back out. I take no such responsibility. Firstly, I don't know all the answers. And secondly, even the answers I do know, you might not be able to understand. Meaning, with all due respect, some things take years to understand. The Pnei Yehoshua writes on a Gemara in Kiddush, and he says, I spent 30 years not understanding this Gemara. For 30 years, he wrote one of the greatest works on Talmud, the Pnei Yehoshua. And he writes, for 30 years, I didn't understand this line, and then it came to me. So sometimes things don't come right away. We have to approach things with a level of humility. Remember that what we're studying has been studied for a few millennium before we came to the scene. So let's not assume that we've invented the wheel. Chances are that if we have a question, others have asked it before us, and let's see what answers are out there. We have to realize that when you're climbing a mountain, there are many ways to get to the top. There's no one formula that says this is what you have to, this is the way you have to get to the truth. Meaning we're headed to the same place. The truth is singular, the truth is one, but the paths are numerous. And what resonates with one doesn't necessarily resonate with another. A person doesn't have to feel guilty because what he's hearing doesn't resonate with him or doesn't make sense to him. It could be that over time it will resonate with him, and it could be that a different approach is better for you. That's okay. We have to be open to the fact that you might not have answers in this class. Meaning maybe everything I say is not for you. But there are a lot of other rabbis out there. And I say what I say based on my understanding. I'm one human being with one perspective. There are many other people out there who know much more than me and have different approaches than I do. So if you find that this class is not addressing in a way that's amenable to you, that's not a reason to leave Judaism. That's not a reason to assume anything that's said is false. It's just a reason to keep searching. I'd like to dedicate our learning to Rav Pesin Zatzal. For many years, I walked around with some very, very basic questions in Judaism, and I heard all kinds of answers. And the first time I met him, he gave me time, and I posed questions to him. And every question I'd pose, he'd pull out some esoteric book, he'd pull it out, show me a footnote, and he'd say, here's the answer to that question. And I'd ask him another question, and he'd find another book, and he brought me from Geonim and Rishonim and Gemaras and Midrashim. And I remember standing there for 2 hours, and it was like, oh, wow, wait, this is what I was looking for. And I stuck with him for years, till the day he died. I kept asking him my questions. I learned by him Talmud and Halacha and Medrash and Jewish philosophy as well. I'm not saying that what I'm about to say here is from him. I'm just saying that here was a rabbi who gave me the time of day and night, and many nights, for a year straight, I'd stay by him after his class would end at 10 o'clock, talking to him till midnight, and then come again in the morning. He'd give class at 4:35 in the morning. I don't know how he did it. I napped in between. But and he gave me a lot of his time, and the fact that I can actually discuss a lot of these points, I owe to him. I owe to him in more ways than one. It's not only the information, it was also the approach and many other things which we might discuss a different day. So it's only fitting we should dedicate our learning to him. We are purposely having this class once a week for a half hour. In my opinion, we will go too fast. Even once a week in a half hour, I hope we will cover many points and many concepts that really require thought. And I hope that over the course of the week, in between our classes, you will think about what we're discussing, digest the concepts we're discussing. Remember, Moshe Rabbeinu also needed a pause in between what he learned to digest the information. So think about it. We are going to deal with the most serious issues on earth, and I hope we will be able to do it with a smile and be easygoing about it, in spite of the fact that what we're dealing with is the most serious topic on earth. There are different approaches to the truth. And we can approach it from within. Everyone sitting here is observing Judaism and knows a lot of what it says in the Torah and in the Talmud. We can approach it from within, gleaning from the wisdom we have from Sinai. We could approach it from within after the Sinai revelation, in light of the Sinai revelation, in light of the miracles of Exodus and other miracles in our history. But we have to know that there's got to be a way to get to this from without. Because Avraham Avinu preceded Exodus and the revelation at Sinai. And he not only recognized that there was monotheism, he also taught it. Now, Avraham was a super genius. I mean, he was a child prodigy. He did what others could not do. Remember, he wasn't the first one to know there was monotheism on planet Earth. But his predecessors, Noach, Shem, Aver, they couldn't get a following like Avraham. So the truth is not only about understanding it, but it's also about how can we express it. And we know the Torah expects of non-Jews to recognize monotheism and to observe the seven Noahide laws. So there's got to be a way to attain this through one's own logic, not only through the Torah. But that doesn't mean we will be able to get to Avraham Avinu's level. We are not the super geniuses Avraham Avinu was. We weren't philosophizing at age 3, arguing with the greatest philosophers at age 5. We're not Avraham Avinu. So although there are many paths out there, we're going to explore a few, and I think they are complementary. I don't think that they are contradictory. We have to have patience. Whenever we begin a series on Jewish thought, I always say no teenagers allowed. A teenager, by definition, is a guy who says, I want the answer now. And if you can't answer me now, then obviously what you're saying is wrong. You got to have patience. Be mature. You can't understand everything in one day, and you can't understand everything at this point in your life. There is a certain amount which it's legitimate that you should want to understand and that you should be able to understand. But we have to have patience. We will be building at a relatively fast pace, in my opinion, but to you it'll probably seem like a relatively slow pace. And that's because you want to hit the bottom line. Everyone has certain questions they want answered. Well, I can tell you that a lot of the questions will not be answered here tonight and will not be answered here at all. Because I want us to differentiate between two types of questions. And this is critical, and this is a point which I want you guys to think about. Certain questions are very good questions, but they don't invalidate truths that we know. If we can attain certain truths, then the fact that we cannot answer all the questions we would like to answer in light of those truths does not invalidate those truths. Let's take a case in point. Let's look at Avraham Avinu and God's commandment to go and bind his son. Avraham Avinu knows what God told him to do. That's crystal clear. And he doesn't know how to reconcile what God just told him to do with the God he thought he knew, with the other things God told him, with the concept of God being kind and running the world. But if you asked Avraham Avinu, tell me, does God run the world? The answer is yes. So you ask Avraham Avinu, can you explain to me why God told you to go and bind your son and slaughter him? And Avraham Avinu is going to tell you, I don't know. You ask Avraham Avinu, God told you everything's going to be good. God told you, get up, leave your family, leave everything you have, leave your financial security, leave your fame, go to the land of Canaan, and things will be good. You will be wealthy. You will be famous. And Avraham comes to that land of Canaan, the way God told him, and he loses all his wealth. Now God told him one thing, and another thing happened. And not only loses all his wealth, he has to leave. God told him, come to Canaan, and things will be good for you. He came to Canaan, and things went bad for him. He goes down to Egypt. And it's not only that he's in debt, a wealthy man has reached the point of debt, but the most basic thing in a person's life is taken from him, his wife. So we look in 20/20 hindsight and we say, yeah, she came back the next day. He didn't know that. The moment his wife was taken, no one told him he'd ever see her again. So you ask Avraham Avinu, does God run the world? Yes. Is God good? Yes. Why is God doing this to you? What's Avraham Avinu going to tell you? So the challenge sometimes is recognizing that the questions do not contradict the truths I know. I have questions, and they're big questions. But the fact that I have questions does not contradict necessarily the truths I know. You guys with me? That's a very, very key point. Very often people get confused on this point. They say, how could a Holocaust happen? How come there are kids with cancer? How come? Oh, they're all good questions. I'm not saying they're bad questions. There are different angles. There are different ways in which Chazal answered those questions. And maybe we won't have an answer to all those questions. Meaning, if our expectation is that because we will recognize the truth of God being the creator and God being good and God having expectations of us and God giving us a Torah, we think that therefore we will be able to draw this box and fit God into that box, that's not going to work. There are going to be questions and it's going to be more complex than that. But we have to recognize that if I can attain a certain truth, then the fact that I have other questions does not contradict that truth. Questions are questions and truths are truths. And we have to be able to discern between the two. You guys with me? So now I want to begin with... I want to begin with a journey. Let's envisage ourselves 3.5 millennium ago. Let's imagine that all of us were in Egypt and we saw 10 plagues. We saw that the country that was the master of all sorcery, the people who were the masters of the masters of all kinds of witchcraft and sorcery and trickery in that country, came to recognition, Etzba Elokimi. This is a finger of God. There is a God, he's running the show, and this is his pinky. This is his finger. They said it, not me. And let's imagine that all the leaders and all the greatest economy, everything has been brought down to its knees because God says, Leman Teda, I want you to know that I'm running the show. And we all saw this. And then we saw the epitome of this. We saw the plague in which the Egyptian god, the firstborn, the Egyptians worshipped their firstborn, was killed in one night at midnight. And the Egyptian god, the sheep, we slaughter it on the day that is, they believe, is its most powerful day, the 15th of the month in the zodiac that is the sheep, the month of Nisan. And we roast it whole. We do this in front of our captors, in front of the Egyptians, and then we walk out and witness the great miracles of the splitting of the sea. We see the prophecy of the splitting of the sea. We see the revelation at Sinai. And then we get together, all of us, and I say, guys, let's think 3 millennium down the road. How are we going to ensure that the people who live 3 millennium down the road, that they remain monotheists, that they know that God runs the show, that they know that God chose us as his people, that they know that we were taken out of slavery with great miracles, that they know that God punishes those who go against his will and rewards those that go with his will. We have so many concepts we have to pass on and ensure that they stay intact for 3,000 generations. So we sit there huddled, and Moshe comes up with an idea. He says, let's have every Jew from now on wear a big t-shirt that says, I left Egypt, or I'm from the people that left Egypt. And Amichai says, wait, let's do better. Let's wear a t-shirt and a hat. We're all part of this club. The hat says, we left Egypt. And then Yehuda says, wait, we got to also celebrate the anniversary. So let's take that anniversary, let's take the foods we ate then, and let's have a roast, just like we did then. And Mike says, but wait, that's not enough. You have to have a situation where when the kids actually ask you, hey, why are you Jewish? You take that anniversary and you take advantage of it, and you say, let me explain to you something. This is what my father told me, and his father told me, and his father told him, going back to this night, and this night, we've been doing this, so that for 3,000 years we can hold on to that. And then Ephraim says, no, I don't like that. That's not enough. You know, you have to have once a week that the family sits down and says, you know, once upon a time, we couldn't sit down and rest. And now we could sit down and rest because we are no longer slaves in Egypt. It's not enough to wait for that once a year anniversary. It's not, that's not going to work. So Moshe says, that's nice, but we got to do better than that. We got to make a declaration twice a day about monotheism. And it's not enough to wait for once a week. Amichai says, no, I want to do better. We have to have the calendar revolve around this concept. Amichai says, let's do even better than that. Let's have every Jew wave a flag that says, I was taken out of Egypt. God did these miracles on my behalf. I am a monotheist. I believe God gives all these wages. Make sense? Yehuda says, I want better. I want that every Jew cuts off the tip of his nose. We have to look different. Every Jew has to cut off the tip of his nose. They'll see us with these flagrant, wide noses. They'll know we're different. That's a sign we're a monotheist. We have a pact with God. Why leave it to the flag, to the hat, to the shirt? Do it more obvious than that.
So we came along and said, no, let's not do the nose. Let's get somewhere else.
Okay. You guys see where I'm headed? If you look around you, that's exactly what we do. Every morning we wear that t-shirt and that hat. We wear a tefillin. What does the tefillin say? It says, Shema Yisrael Shem Kenu Shem Echad. Hashem took San Mitzrayim. Hashem designated the firstborn. Look at us Jews. We wear that t-shirt. Every day we have a declaration that every Jew wears on his arm and on his head. In more ancient times, people would walk around all day like that. What is it called? It's called an oath. It's a sign. It's called the Zikaron de Ninecha. Let's have a commemoration between our eyes. Pretty good hat. Pretty good, pretty good t-shirt. It says it very clearly. It says about the plague of the firstborn. It says why we sanctify the firstborn. We do that anniversary you suggested. Every Pesach night, we sit down, we slaughter, we make a roast, just like then. Okay, we don't have a temple, we can't do a roast, but we eat the matzah. We sit down and tell our kid, tonight, this is the anniversary. This is what my father told me, his father told him, his father told him. We have a flag. Every Jew has a mezuzah out his door. He has that bumper sticker that says, hey, I'm a monotheist, and God runs the world, and he gives, I know, he gives good to those who do good, he gives bad to those who do bad. We count our calendar, our months, the first month, second month, third month, they don't go by the beginning of the year. They go by the Exodus. We eat double bread every Shabbos. What do we say on Shabbos? Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim. We say, hey, once a week, we're going to stop and tell our kids, what do we do Shabbos, Friday night? We take a cup of wine, and we say, listen here, family members, why are we starting this Shabbos where we're all going to rest? Because once upon a time in Mitzrayim, we couldn't rest at all. So now we have a day in which we rest to commemorate everything that happened in Mitzrayim. Think about it. You guys can you think of another suggestion? I mean, you've covered the dress, you've covered the food you eat, you cover your house, you cover the signs you wear. Twice a day we declare in Shema that we are monotheists, that God pays back, that God took us out of Mitzrayim. What more can you do? We slice ourselves. We do a bris milah, a declaration that we have a covenant with God. We're a continuation of Abraham. He wants to cut off our noses. What's left to do? Meaning, if you were living 3,000 years ago, let's take God out of the picture for a minute. If you were living 3,000 years ago, and you wanted to commemorate this so that for 3,000 years later, people will recognize this as true, could you think of something we didn't cover? Think about it. As many signs in every direction that you could think of, we do. We take our firstborn son and we say, wait, I can't have him because God passed over my home. And technically all the Egyptian firstborns were killed. Mine wasn't. Well, not this one, but as commemoration, I'm going to redeem this first one from death because the Egyptian firstborn were killed. In every aspect of our lives, if you think about it, morning and night, what we wear, the tzitzis we wear, the tefillin we wear, the Shabbos we keep, the mezuzah on our door, the Pesach, the way we count our months, the Lechem Mishnah we eat on Shabbos commemorates that miraculous bread that came down from the heaven. I can't think of another way. If you guys could think of something, another way to keep it, then tell me. And this is just something I want us to think about. We haven't even begun touching on the Kuzari. I want us to begin from within, to realize how many things we ourselves are doing from the day of Sinai, from the revelation of Sinai, how many things we're doing that are indicative of these basic tenets of Jewish faith. And let's put ourselves for a minute in God's shoes, so to speak. Obviously, it's disrespectful, but let's imagine for a minute that we had to pass down the tradition for 3,000 years. Could you think of something that we didn't cover? To be continued next week, Ms. Achim.